Penguin Random House Canada presents Where the Falcon Flies, a 3,400-kilometer odyssey from my doorstep to the Arctic, by Adam Schultz. Read for you by the author. To my family. Preface. I was clinging to the side of a mountain, edging along a steep cliff of the sort it's unwise to fall off. It had been 3 months since I'd last seen home, and there wasn't another soul around for miles. I was deep in one of North America's wildest mountain ranges, a place few people ever set foot. The high peaks around me had been shrouded in drifting fog, making these ancient mountains feel even more mysterious than they already did. The granite crags were thickly covered in lichens, with little tufts of grass sprouting up wherever there was some crack in the rock. In the shadowy crevices where the sun couldn't reach was hard-packed snow and ice. I continued edging along, holding on to the weathered rocks to steady myself. Hiking alone in these ultra-remote mountains, where there were no trails and numerous loose boulders, meant I had to be extra careful. If I slipped, my bones would become a new addition to the landscape, until a bear found them and stripped them apart to get at the marrow on the inside. A momentary break in the mist allowed me a better view. Ahead was a steep rock face, which seemed promising in terms of what I was searching for, not for climbing. I strained my ears to the slight wind, hoping to catch somewhere in the mist the sound of my objective. But I heard nothing aside from the breeze around the peaks above. Another few steps brought me to a clump of crowberries clinging to the rocks. I crouched down to pick a few and satisfy my hunger. Crowberries are a little bland, but not bad when you're half-starved. Growing next to the crowberries, I came upon some juicy lingonberries, which cheered my spirits. It was only mid-July, and lingonberries don't usually ripen until late August, meaning these were last year's crop of berries, which had overwintered. This gave the burgundy-colored berries a rich, fermented taste. Just as I was plucking another berry, I caught a flash of movement. Something had passed overhead through the fog. I froze. It was only the merest glimpse, but I thought I recognized it. It looked like the shape of a majestic bird, the monarch of the air, the world's fastest animal, a peregrine falcon. These amazing raptors can reach speeds of over 200 miles an hour when they dive bomb unsuspecting prey, and for centuries have been prized in cultures worldwide as a symbol of nobility and prowess. In my excitement, though, I couldn't be sure. It might have been a figment of my imagination or just some other bird. But if it was a falcon, there was a chance it might have a nest nearby, as falcons nest on steep, inaccessible cliffs, much like the one I'd reached, the very thing I'd been seeking all along. From my backpack, I carefully drew out my camera in the hope that the falcon, if that's what it was, might reappear. Then, camera ready, I edged closer to the precipitous cliff. Chapter 1. Bird Watching. We lived in the little village of St. Williams, nestled on the north shore of Lake Erie, in Ontario's Norfolk County. It's a rural county with old-growth forests and deep ravines filled with ancient creaking hemlocks, giant sycamores, stately oaks, and winding little trout streams. But what really makes it a wonderful place for a nature lover to call home is that Norfolk is a haven for migratory birds of all kinds. Each spring, hundreds of different species pass through the area, heading in many cases to the far north. And it was this fact, more than any other, that set me off on perhaps the greatest adventure of my life. I'd been looking out the porch window of our little house one early spring morning at the unplanted farmers' fields across the road, watching gray clouds passing rapidly by on a stiff breeze. Then, suddenly, a largish bird appeared, flapping across the distant sky. I recognized the peculiar way it flapped its wings as something out of the ordinary. Not a hawk or an eagle, as I'd often seen. There was only one bird that flew like that. I'd spotted them from my canoe in the Arctic, and seeing it now reminded me of those lands and journeys. It was a peregrine falcon. The falcon soon disappeared beyond the fields and over the edge of the woods, but I remained standing at the window a moment or two longer, staring off into the sky where it had flown. The sight of it left me with the stirrings of an idea, thinking as I did how fascinating it was that some of the birds I saw out my porch window would fly onward to the Arctic, thousands of miles away. Here in southern Ontario, the Arctic felt impossibly remote. Yet the falcon seemed to suggest an intriguing link between the faraway Arctic and my front yard. Turning suddenly from the window, I sought out a map of Canada among the books and papers lying on my desk. When I'd found it, I traced my finger over what I thought might be the falcon's route north. Falcons nest almost all across the Arctic, but one place in particular they favor are the rugged peaks of the Torngat Mountains. In these remote and windswept mountains, high on inaccessible cliffs, falcons make their nests. I'd never been to the Torngats, but had long wanted to see these most majestic of Arctic mountains. And there they were, labeled on the top right corner of the map, at the tip of Labrador in eastern Quebec. Staring at them now and thinking of the falcon I'd just spotted, a wild idea occurred to me. Why not get out my canoe, grab my backpack, and follow the falcon all the way to the Arctic? It was true there was no obvious route from our house to the Arctic, but this small detail barely entered my head. In the moment, I was swept up with the thought of how neat it'd be to witness firsthand the gradual change in the landscape as I slowly worked my way north, from the lush Carolinian forest of southernmost Ontario, with their broad-leafed trees like hickory and sassafras, to the white pines and maples of the mixed Great Lakes forest, to the more northern boreal forest and that somber evergreen woods, which thin eventually into the small, stunted trees of the subarctic lands, and finally, to the icy tundra and permafrost of the Arctic itself. Such a journey would furnish a unique chance to explore each of these natural regions, and the gradual transitions between them, which together span Canada. I'd studied these different regions in my geography classes, but I felt it was one thing to look at them on the printed page and another to experience them in real life. The more I thought about it, the more the idea appealed to me of this chance to observe the landscape and to see it the same way people first had centuries ago, from the stern of a canoe. Some of the lands I'd passed through would have changed little since those days, others almost beyond recognition. Nearly everywhere, though, I could be sure of finding echoes of the past, and traveling by canoe would offer the possibility of exploring these too. I stood up from the desk and resolved, right then and there, to set off on a journey after the falcon to the Arctic, pending the necessary approval from my wife, Alexandria. Luckily, Alexandria, a keen birder herself, greeted my idea with her usual enthusiasm when I shared it with her over breakfast. She loves the outdoors nearly as much as I do, although she prefers to enjoy it more through backyard birdwatching and gardening. With her help and encouragement, I began packing that very day, with the hope that I could be ready to leave before the week was out. Alas, it was not to be. It was March 2020, and the world, or at least our corner of it, was about to be put on hold. The COVID pandemic happened. Restrictions were put in place, and 2 weeks of waiting turned into 2 years. In the meantime, circumstances changed. Alexandria and I ended up moving, and then became parents with the birth of our first child. Parenthood made months-long canoe journeys more complicated. I continued to do smaller expeditions for the Royal Canadian Geographical Society as my livelihood depended on it. but shorter journeys weren't as remunerative.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?